Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
But let me introduce James Williams, who's the local county commissioner for the last 5-6 years. In Lake County, and he has some perspective. He reads a lot of the information and data that's in the news, and a lot of stuff that's not in the news, and so he's going to give us a little perspective, but of course we're going to bring that perspective back to the kingdom and the message of the gospel, like the show this morning where we did John 10. We're constantly trying to make the gospel relevant to people today. But of course you have to hear the gospel first, and then we take a look at that in relationship to what's going on in the real world where everybody lives. So without any further ado, I'm going to bring on James Williams, and hopefully this will be a test of everybody's mic. So I see that there you go. His mic is now unmuted. I don't have complete control here. But James, what's new on the Rittermark out there in the world?
Oh, lots of things. It's been an eventful year. I think we've had a lot of things going on. I would say one of the topics that we talked about discussing today was pertaining to CAFOs. What we call CAFOs here in the state of Oregon, which are confined animal feeding operations, were feedlots and different things like that for a large amount of animals. They're different for poultry and cattle, and we have a significant dairy industry here in the state of Oregon, so CAFOs are a big part of what make those operations successful. It's a part of how you do business on farms. Of course, small farms now, you know, there's an argument that small farms are under attack, which I would agree with 100%. Some of them are under attack by larger agricultural industries because it's competition. And so we had an eventful 2023 session here in the state where there was some discussion around land use, as there usually always is. Land use is and continues to be the bane of my existence. And has been for the last 5 years that I've been in office. But there's another element to all this, and that's water. Water rights, and we're seeing that across the entire country and in different parts of the world. We're seeing war against farmers, and I use that term, in my opinion, quite appropriately, in France and in parts of Europe, where there's a lot of constraint and additional impacts that are being placed on farmers that are making it harder for them to do business, especially on a smaller scale. We've seen it going in this direction for the last 50 plus years, where we've seen a lot of industrialized farming, where it's harder to make a living on smaller scales. But now it's just reached a point where there's subsidization of large corporate farming, and a lot of requirements being placed on the smaller producers. And so we're reaching a tipping point now where the idea of growing food to feed your family or just your community has become difficult. I don't know exactly which one of those you want to tackle first. I mean, there's a lot of caveats to Oregon water law, which I think you can tie to the kingdom and why we're not operating in the kingdom today, specifically around, you know, how we've structured our water law in the state of Oregon and in many of the western states. But also there's this conversation around land use and CAFOs and farm use and what all those actual requirements are being placed on people. I admit that in 2023 I was quite frustrated at the CAFO bill, which was Senate Bill 85. I don't want to spend too much time on that because it's done, it's over, And when it happened, there was an immediate injunction that was filed against the bill for being inappropriate and putting too many constraints on people. And so that's been, like, working itself out. And I think the folks...
What was the nature of that bill exactly, so that our listeners will have an idea of what you're talking about?
Okay, perfect. So Senate Bill 85 had multiple versions, or what we would call a dash amendment, dash one, dash two, and so forth, went all the way to a dash four amendment. There was some of those amendments that we supported as some of the rural Oregon County commissioners. I was asked to testify against it. I can give you the exact date in which I was speaking on it, which was March 13th, 2023, in the Natural Resource Committee for the Senate, met at 8 o'clock in the morning, and some of us testified, some of us did not, but the majority of us were on the same page, and we had had many conversations with both senators and representatives prior to that meeting on what the impacts of this capital bill was. What the bill was aiming to do, it was a conversation that was brought forward by some environmental communities that wanted to ensure that there weren't going to be impacts to the water table and the aquifers and water storage from some of these large CAFOs. Again, that's confined animal feeding operations, which, you know, is several thousand cattle in one single space. You might actually have to take a look at how much water you're using and how much what the water runoff situation is, depending on where you are in the state. Say you're in Tillamook County, where it rains 10 feet of rain per year, and you're at sea level, and your neighbor who is going to have that runoff or potential impacts on his land is, you know, 40 feet away. And they're, you know, or 100 feet away or whatnot, there could be impacts to that, even if it's a pre-existing use on that landscape. And it's an allowable use on agricultural land for these farming operations. But the environmental community, who don't like a lot of these animal operations and they like to put them out of business and put pressure on the agricultural community, was making an argument. For the most part, no one was paying attention to it. Not giving it a huge amount of credence. We were listening. And the legislature can't necessarily ignore things when it comes up. They can't outright ignore it intentionally. So what transpired to was a bill that was going to put a hold. You can't take pre-existing use away that was granted to someone based on their property rights and allowable use. But what they were going to do was stop and pause any additional CAFOs from being cited until they could evaluate whether or not there was going to be impacts in this area, whatnot, what could be the impacts. They do things that are called land use compatibility statements. When you're granted the ability to build this, it's not that, you know, a denial is even on the table. It's that, okay, you have a right to do this. You have property rights, and this is your land. Completely understand. It's zoned agricultural, but we want to make sure that you're going through a process to ensure that you're not impacting other neighbors. And it's the way land use law is structured.
Now, I have an email, not an email, actually, it was on Facebook. I had shared a video about the influence of, there was a lot of things to it, but financial influences and stuff like that of Congress, that if, you know, congressmen are influencing a lot of things in through the government by regulation, and then they're investing in companies or investing in stock where they're making millions of dollars because of the choices that they made and imposing these laws. And they didn't used to do that. And we have, you know, they gave the... In the video originally, they gave the example of if you're a sports guy, you know, you're on a team, it's going to be playing in the Super Bowl, you can't bet on the outcome of the game because you could throw the game and make a lot of money. But yet we let congressmen and senators, it used to be ethics had something to do with it where people just didn't do it. And they set aside their businesses while they were congressmen. But now we know congressmen and senators become millionaires because they do this. Now, what you're talking about is a little bit different, or can be, But when I posted that, somebody came back, Matthew Kingman came back and says, why do we A, have a Congress, and B, regulate anything? And of course you're talking about regulation, so I kind of took it all the way back to the beginning. So, and when we see this, you have friends in Holland, and you see what's going on in places in Europe, and they are just, and France, they're just running farmers out of business with regulations. Already, if you don't take government subsidies, you can't even run a farm in Great Britain.
Right.
You won't be able to make a living. And then now they're coming along and regulating if you are trying to regulate if you have one goat or one cow.
We'll get to that.
But what I wanted to go back to is, because I don't know if all our listeners quite picked up on it, if you have a dairy farm with 100 dairy cows or 200 dairy cows or 300 dairy cows, and you might be a family farm, not even a corporate, big corporate farm. You might have been incorporated, but you're a family farm. And you've got 100, 200 cows pooping and urinating. What are you doing with all that? Like you say, if you're 50 miles from a water, not 50 miles, but 50 feet, 50 yards from a waterway, and you have a big rain in places like Tillamook, it can wash, even whether you don't intend it, it can wash a lot of that into the river and change the nature, the pH of the river, and somebody, the neighbor down the river, the neighbor, you know, 2 miles down the river, the neighbor 10 miles down the river is going to get different water than he normally should get. And you should not be putting that into the water. And the way it does under common law is all the neighbors get together and they go and they say, stop doing this. And they tell them, and, you know, we see the scenes in the Bible where they go to the tribe of Reuben and who's on the other side of the river, and they come to talk to them with their swords at their side. And of course, Reuben assures them that, no, no, we've got you in mind. We're going to be careful. But that's a real problem. So people say, well, why do we have anybody regulating this? Well, the government often is the source of that regulation today, because all the people in Tillamook don't get together. They're all scattered flock. If their neighbor's getting, you know, abused by another neighbor, they don't run over to his house and say, stop abusing our neighbor, because they don't care about their neighbor's rights as much as they care about their own. And that's what we're seeing with some of these complaints about some of these laws that they're passing, is that somebody's complaining. But we just saw, like I said, through COVID and all this stuff, people were getting their businesses shut down, they're getting their life savings drained away from them, and nobody knew what to do or how to do it. And so people think, well, we'll get the government to fix this. But every time you do that, the government gets more powerful. So yeah, a lot of times you're in there making votes, or you did testimony on bills you're not even going to vote on because you're a county commissioner.
Right.
You're totally bipartisan. You're not a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or constitutional, whatever they call that party. you're just trying to do what's right with the tools that are available to you, but you're also trying to get the people to start doing what is right, so that you don't have to be asking the government to regulate everything. So with that picture in mind, yeah, there's a need to regulate one another if one another is damaging your neighbor. And if you're slothful in that, government will get more and more powerful. So you bringing the perspective of, you know, your voice to these matters, and I've heard it from other commissioners and other people saying that you bring up stuff that nobody even thought about, because all these people went to public school, which was teaching them what to think. And you're bringing a different perspective to it. So, yeah.
I appreciate that. I guess I would say there are a lot of good commissioners, though, that, you know, and the fact that I may be the first person sometimes on an occasion to mention things that no one had thought about before, the fact that they are willing to listen to that, though, and consider it, and they think, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that before. That may be true, but they understood it, they identified it, they recognized it immediately, and they drew an immediate moral opinion as to whether or not that is a right or correct perspective. So it wasn't that, okay, fine, I may have mentioned it, but it was written on their hearts. It was there, because otherwise they wouldn't have recognized it as being the correct perspective to have and consider it then with a thoughtful perspective. So I don't know if I would necessarily say that that many of the men and women that I work with are without a considerate heart and without empathy and without a desire to do the right thing as well. And you're making a very good point on what the involvement that is necessary on behalf of the people, and to avoid the slothful, selfish behavior that so often gets us into trouble. And this CAFO bill is the perfect example of that. And I would share something that you've heard me say before, and we've said it many times. I've said it many times. And I shared this with the Oregon Senate president and a number of other reps and senators on this issue. We were kind of sitting in a room. There was a few other reps in the room. And I kind of looked up at one point, and I said, you know, the real reason we're all sitting here is because most people, as it turns out, are actually perfectly comfortable with the idea of a dictator, as long as it's their dictator. And this bill, when it was coming out, we were against the concept of the bill initially, but in order to, you cannot just come to the table and say no. Yes, I was asked to testify in opposition to the bill, but it's not always as simple as just being in opposition. You need to come to the table with reasoning and a solution, typically in the way of an alternative. And so one of the alternatives was, instead of saying no to CAFOs outright and stripping people of their land rights, because the environmental community wanted us to simply say no and to go retroactive even and make these things illegal. And it's like, no, actually, you cannot do that. And the legislature should not have that power. But again, they wanted us to have that power. And some people, if they're not policed correctly and they don't police each other, especially when they're in that position of power, they will take it on and they will do it. And unless people challenge it. So the alternative from us was, we looked at within Senate Bill 85, there was Section 12, which pertained directly to land use. And we found that that was where the county nexus actually existed and where we could actually engage in a meaningful way. And we cited things like ORS 30, 935, right to farm, ORS 215, local ordinances on farm use, ORS 633, prohibitions to prevent production of seed products. There's a whole ORS specifically there within state statute to prohibit local governments or any government from impacting or prohibiting farmers from producing seed. And so there's all sorts of things built within state law. Now, there is a requirement that has been on the books for many years. Now, you mentioned earlier, you know, about like, okay, you're going to have this big operation within 10 miles or something of this operation, and you got to make sure that you're not actually impacting your neighbor either. You know, have some empathy and consideration for how this may be affecting them. Well, in state law, it's actually half a mile. DEQ will not issue a permit, or the Oregon Department of Ag, for these things if you're located within half a mile of a fish-bearing stream, unless you can show mitigatable tools, implementation, or implement mitigatable measures. And so Section 12 has a whole lot of elements within land use that we could take into consideration, and we said, all right, well, what we could live with, because we're against the idea of outright, you know, closing these operations down because it's going to hurt farms all across Oregon, we'll go with a temporary hold, sunset date on the bill. I believe it was 2027 when this bill would just expire. So basically, Oregon Department of Agriculture and DEQ and one other agency, it might have been Oregon Department of Water Resource, They were charged with trying to figure out, okay, what are the damages? So you have this group coming to you, the environmental community, and they're saying, look at all these impacts. This is affecting people. You know, there's huge amounts of waste and so forth. And so the state can't just ignore that because you could be putting people's lives in jeopardy, and the state feels it has a responsibility to the citizens and residents that live within their state boundary. We can get into a whole other argument about who actually owns the people or not, and who the people and what altars the people pray to, but that's another subject entirely. The point is that the state recognizes the responsibility that they have to protect the welfare and well-being of the citizens and the residents of their state. So they say, okay, we'll look at it. We'll evaluate it. We'll see if this is actually true or not. And we said we were fine with that. Many counties in eastern Oregon and rural Oregon especially were like, it's not really a problem. For Lake County, for instance, we have about 4 or 5 CAFOs. One of them is over on Arrow Gap. You know, there's a big feedlot up there. There's a couple in the county. But they're not significant, and we're about 45 feet above sea level. There's no water.
Oh, 4,500 feet above sea level.
4,500, sorry.
Yeah.
4,500 feet above sea level. My apologies. 4,500 feet above sea level. And there are no fish streams within any distance to any of that. We do have a critical groundwater area within the north end of our county, but there's nothing sited within that. They have there's no impact of that. There's very few cattle even on the north end of the county, at least in the Crescent Valley area, because they just grow hay there. They don't necessarily grow a ton of beef. So we don't really have a CAFO issue, and we didn't see any impact to even a pause, because we didn't see anything really being sited anytime soon, so we could just go through this process. Here's the wrinkle. The county in western Oregon, Linn County, with 3 very conservative commissioners, one of which has been in the office for about 26 to 27 years, Roger Nyquist, who basically cuts rank, abandons AOC, goes and does his own testimony, because prior to this bill coming about, there was an application from a farm, an actual farm. We're going to talk about who's actually against farming and everything here. There was a poultry farm there in Linn County that was looking to site a CAFO. And they had a confined feeding area that they wanted to get a permit for, which technically in the state of Oregon is an outright approved use. You go to the planning director and say, I want to do this. Planning director signs off on it. I don't even know if we charge for it in Lake County. It's basically just a sheet of paper saying, okay, thank you for letting us know that you're doing this because it's an outright approved use. I think there might be some requirements around it. You might have to pull like a $20 permit. I'm not sure. But this is in Linn County where this whole thing is taking place. And I actually think, and I could be wrong on this, but it actually may have already been an established use. Like, it was an old farm, been there for a long time, and they had been doing this for a while, but they never actually got a sign-off approval to do so. So they go make it right. They go bring it to the county. It goes before the planning commission. The planning commission approves it. Done. You're done. You're good to go. Bunch of neighbors who had moved into this area, moved into farming country. They had acquired conditional use permits for non-farm dwellings on agricultural land. So they're not actually farming. They just want to live where it looks nice. And they want to live in a farming community where there are farms. And they get permission to do this. So it's kind of an outside of the use of that land because they want to have like a residence and for residential purposes, but they're not actually farming. Right around this place. But when they apply for this permit, they all get a little note in the mail saying so-and-so is going to go and put this CAFO in. And turns out a bunch of these neighbors are a bunch of pills. And they decide that they're going to appeal this. And because they don't want to, oh, I don't want to smell a bunch of chicken manure. You moved into an agricultural area. A bunch of NIMBYs. And NIMBY, for those who don't know, is short for not in my backyard. I've always said is that turns out your backyard ends at your fence line and everything beyond that is someone else's property and you better learn how to live together. And unfortunately, these people didn't know how. So what happened was the Planning Commission had approved it. It gets appealed to the Board of Commissioners, and the Board of Commissioners sway to public opinion and deny it. Overturn the Planning Commission's decision. They deny the application. The farm turns around and appeals to the state. Again, what altars are we praying to here? But they go to the state because they couldn't get a fair shake from the local government.
Or the local people.
Or the local people.
Because people say it's the government's job. That they're taking away the rights of my neighbor.
Me.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that empowers the government more. But it was interesting, some of the things that come out of this, and of course we're going to try to always bring this back to the reason you have a powerful government that is regulating everything you do is because you've been slothful in the weightier matters of dealing with law, judgment, mercy, and faith. You don't mind taking away the rights of your neighbor for your benefit. And so this is the devil's hand. It's getting you to look to the government to solve your problems. But go ahead.
No, it's true. I mean, right now you've got all these articles that are going around and they're trying to say that, oh, look at how bad the government is to farmers. It was the people who didn't care about the farmer. And they were perfectly fine with Commissioner Nyquist stripping landowners of their property rights. They were perfectly fine with that, as long as it was that neighbor. They didn't want their rights being inhibited, or what they perceived to be their rights, even though they were all living in homes that were probably approved with conditional use permits that were outside of the more appropriate use of the land, which was for farming. And so they all decided to gang up together against the farmer, and now the government's looking like the bad guy. Well, you know, I mean, the reality is the majority of governments, you know, are actually perfectly fine filling that definition of dictator. They will fill that role as both savior of conservation or enforcement. And while the victims make arguments about owning the land and being free, which neither are usually correct, there's this whole, it creates this huge debacle. And so this gets appealed to the state. The state turns around and overrules the county and says, no, you can't deny this person their land right. They have an allowable use on agricultural land. They meet the criteria. If you wanted to put restrictions on them or put some conditions of approval, fine. But you can't just strip them of their land right. They meet the requirements. So this gets appealed. Meanwhile, right as this is kind of happening, right after this bill, Senate Bill 85, comes into the legislature in 2023. And it's in the long session. We're talking about a lot of things. The counties are all on board. We're okay with a pause. Commissioner Nyquist gets up there and he says, I think this is appalling that the state thinks they can overrule the counties. And they can take local discretion away from the counties deciding their own fate. Well, gee, I mean, like, that's my argument, but you're being a dictator with it, and you're not being fair to your people. And
well, he was just overruling the normal, you know, rights of those individuals to farm on farmland.
Correct.
And the people that are doing it are people that are not farmers who got a special permission to use farmland for non-farm use.
Correct.
And as soon as they got in there with their little houses and their little few acres, they start taking away the rights of all the farmers around them.
And their neighbors.
And then they're wondering, they're saying, they're the first one to scream dictator. Mm-hmm. Yet they are all little dictators. And what does the Bible say? Well, we always bring this. That's my job. Bring it back to the Bible. I know you can do it too. We take bites out of one another.
Yeah.
We took away the rights of our neighbor, and now we're complaining about being devoured. So people say, oh, why do we have a government that regulates things? Because you don't have people that are protecting the rights of their neighbor, and the only one left to protect the rights of the neighbors is the government. They can't go to their neighbor and say, my neighbors are taking away my rights. So they go to the government. And it makes the government more powerful. Now, you'll get special interest coming in, giving $250,000 or $25,000 or $2,500. The price for selling your vote has gone down in the world in a lot of places. And the government becomes the handmaiden of special interests. And those special interests often want to see the big corporate farms succeed and the little family farms go belly up, because you should not need a lawyer to farm the ground or milk a cow. Right. But they are making so many regulations that this ends up being. And what you're showing is how what seems like a legitimate thing and should have been resolved locally with the people of integrity and honesty, but instead they're looking to the government. So now I know that you're getting to know a lot of these people. You speak to a lot of these people, and they're starting to look like, oh yeah, we're actually, and guys, you know, really personal, we're absolutely willing to take away the land use rights of other people. We had the same thing with somebody wanting to start a trailer park. Where people miles and miles away from this trailer park, which was going to have very low impact.
20 miles away.
Wanted to stop that individual who bought this land to create a few trailer spots so that people could come and stay. And, you know, it was like RVs and stuff like that during the winter months or summer months.
Or whatever, yeah.
And they're 20 miles away and they're stopping them from developing their property to make a little income for themselves and be independent and provide a service to the community and people who come through. Those people who come and stay in those trailers are going to shop in the stores during the months that they're there. It's going to improve everybody's life. It's on a huge piece of ground that is surrounded, and it's only a small amount of sites. And people, like you say, 20 miles away, were trying to kill that. And absolutely thinking that they're within their rights to do this, because mm-hmm. we've spent so many years not tending to the weightier matters, not caring about our neighbors as much as we care about our own rights, our children, the neighbor's children. We our focus as true Christian or even Jewish, because this is what the Jews had to do under Moses, they had to care about other people. If otherwise you allow oppressors to come in, and that's why they turn to Saul, solve our problem. We have corruption. We have people abusing other people. We don't want to take the time to go and solve it ourselves. We'll select Saul, give him the power to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's very basic, very fundamental, very grassroots, the solution. But people want to, it's very easy to complain about government. You know, when we did our Article 2, Section 22, and I mentioned that several times, people we know saw that influences outside of the state, not just outside of your district or your county, but influences outside of the state were changing the way in which these congressmen, commissioners, mayors, all these people holding public office were voting and protecting or not protecting the rights of the people in their constituency. Mm-hmm. But they were influenced by this money coming in from outside. We just did a program a couple of weeks ago about how people, and they don't even think it out. They don't even realize what wrong they're doing, what Pandora's box they're opening. They just say, well, I'll get an extra $2,500 in my campaign fund. Or in the case of the former governor, it was $250,000.
$250,000 is $250,000.
$250,000. In her campaign fund after she said she wasn't going to run for office.
From George Soros.
And that's just, you know, that's just such a blatant.
You don't need to necessarily say, though, that was for something that she was going to do, being that she wasn't going to run again. I mean, we could just chalk that up to what the Bidens might consider a delayed payoff.
Yeah.
For services rendered.
And then you can point to, see what we did for her, we could do the same for you if you play ball with us. And I used George Soros. There were a lot of other people that were lobbying out there and trying to get votes. And a lot of times, like you were discovering in that last show, you were pointing out that somebody was paying these guys checks all on the same day to get them to vote a certain way. And they thought, well, yeah, oh, nobody's explaining to them, wait a minute, you're just selling your vote here. But you found out that the money was coming from this company, but that company had the money that they got from another group that you don't even see. They're not signing the check over. Right. They have this action group that's signing the check over. And it's not hidden away.
No, for those who wanted to look and were actually curious, it was discoverable.
Yeah. And well, you found most of it on your phone when you were walking from office to office.
I had a person from the Oregon Department of Energy that was here just the other day. It was on Thursday, and sat down with them for a little meeting with some of our local nonprofit that we had here in Lake County, and that subject came up, and they were like, oh, did you see that article? And I got real quiet, and I just sat there. And based upon some things that I had already said, the person caught the look on my face, and they looked over, and she said, was that you? I think the secret's getting out. I think everyone kind of suspects that someone let the cat out of the bag on this one. And I have a feeling she brought it up specifically to see what my reaction would be, because I think the rumor is that I did let this out. And I don't think the cat's going to stay in the bag much longer. I think everyone kind of knows that I was the tattletale on that whole deal.
Well, you were actually accused of maybe being the author of the bill to begin with.
And that was why I got so involved in it, because I was so upset about the fact that people were using my name inappropriately. I didn't even know about the bill, and the reason I didn't know about the bill was because the author of the bill was actually trying to keep it from me.
Yes.
And keep it secret, and that pissed me off.
Yeah.
But I was, it was very frustrating on that whole deal, and I do take a certain amount of pleasure from seeing people get their hands slapped on that whole deal. Going back to Senate Bill 85, you know, the original intent was that this was only going to affect operations with more than 700 dairy cattle or over 1,000 head of beef that were operating CAFOs. And it was only for those that were within a half a mile of a fish stream,
right,
or fish passage. So, you know, there were a lot of confinements to this bill, but like I mentioned at the beginning, there were several dash amendments that came out, going from the original one or two dash amendments that we said that we could support if done in this way. Suddenly there was a dash three and a dash four after Commissioner Nyquist spoke, and the most stringent, most terrible version of the bill came out, and it was very frustrating for all of us, because we had one county that was off on their own little tangent because they were mad that they got overruled and got caught being a bunch of little dictators. And the state was actually the good guy in that whole deal, in my opinion. I mean, I think they did the right thing. It was they were very not unbiased. The LUBA committee, the Land Use Board of Appeals, the people that are on that, they actually looked at it and they said, nope, this is allowable use. This has gotta go. And they got upset because it was on record now that they were clearly showing bias. The commissioners were catering to a group of people rather than to what was right. And that group of people were not concerned with the rights of their neighbor. And this is a classic case that can be tied to biblical principles. And it's gotten more complicated because there was a water element that was brought into this as well. Not in, from Senate Bill 85, which did inadvertently make it to where even us, if we have a concrete pad where we milk our dairy cow, it would be very, difficult, for us to go and file with a DEQ permit so that we could show a water waste plan where if the cow takes relieves itself, where that water is actually going to go. And is it going to damage the water table? How did, what's your plan to mitigate this? And I mean, it doesn't even, just looking at it logically, we live in the Oregon High Desert. This is going to evaporate before it makes it 2 inches into the ground. It's all going to be gone. But there'd be huge, you know, a process for someone with one dairy cow or one goat or whatnot. You know, it was nonsense. And, you know, it harkened me back to, you know, stories of the kulaks, you know, in Russia, and this war against farmers and those who actually are fortunate enough to own land and are looking to take care of, not only their families, but, you know, we've always maintained that we might have to take care of our whole community at some point one day. So that's kind of,
yeah, if you create a state that has too much power, and we've done that by being slothful in taking care of the rights of our neighbor, then, like I say, outside influences, of which we see a great deal of in the world today, will come in and try to gain influence over that entity that we allowed. You know, they talk about the mark of the beast. Well, the beast is a government. A big, huge government that has all kinds of power, has all kinds of men in it who can exercise authority one over the other. And the reason it gets all this power is because people are slothful in taking care of what is righteous. Yes, the guy who asked, why do we have anybody that can regulate this? Well, because you're not. You're not gathering together in the tens, hundreds, and thousands so that when you have a big dairy farm that comes in, and we had this for years and years in America, corporations were, you know, like paper mills. Paper mills are the way in which they process paper, can produce a lot of unsavory things they have to get rid of, and a lot more than a dairy cow. And they dump it because they've created these processes of breaking down the pulp of the paper and everything. And they would dump it into the river. I used to camp along Isaac Walden League, park right next to a paper mill. Well, 20 years before, you smelled the stink coming out of the paper mill. But now the paper mill has organized itself so it doesn't. But partly, a great deal of that pollution we saw in rivers in America was stopped because individuals got together and used the courts as they were meant to be used to say, look, you're polluting this river downstream. Now, it got went way too far before anybody did anything about it. But they said, you're damaging all these people. And they decided not to do that anymore. And they think that they fixed this because the government made regulations. Well, I can guarantee you, DEQ is not your salvation.
No.
So where your salvation is you have to learn to care about your neighbor and your neighbor's rights as much as you care about your own.
Right.
And the only way to do that is to create bonds between you and your neighbor. And this is what Christ knew, that you had to start taking care of one another, the charity of one another. But right now, 90% of the charity in America to take care of the needy of the people is legal charity. It is, which is not charity at all. It's an oxymoron. Legal charity is that you got the government taking away from your neighbor to provide you with benefits. And that's become pervasive. And of course, I quote Polybius all the time, and if anybody goes to preparing you, look up what Polybius had to say about that 150 years before Christ. But it was the same thing that John the Baptist was saying and Jesus was saying. One of the things that you brought up that I wanted to touch on, and I know it'll open up an entire can of worms, which we should not address in this show, but you're talking about if you do things, practices on your property that destroys the fundamental right to produce seed, as you gave as an example in the statute, that's a violation of law. That you can't hamper people on the production of seed.
Right.
Yet, we can look right in the news for the last 20 years. GMOs have been running seed producers out of business. I mean, we used to have 600 seed cleaners throughout the Midwest. We don't have a single one. They were mobile seed cleaners going around cleaning seeds right. That people could replant their same wheat or whatever it was that they were growing. And they've been all run out of business while we were all going to church and singing our songs by people who produce GMOs that do not contain the pollen of their GMOs on their farms.
Right.
Which blows over.
Which is why this law actually exists. In 2017 is when it was implemented, or 2013 was when the first draft, and then it was amended again in 2017, right? You know, the year before I even started to run. And the reason that was put into place was because of the impacts of some of that on seed producers in the state. We have several seed producers here in Lake County that produce seed. I think Down Valley Falls and places. There are protections there, but remember, and this is very critical, and I don't have the language in front of me, but I remember reading it, and I can provide, this is somewhat paraphrased, but those ORSs on, specific to the seed production are prohibiting local governments and local agencies from writing rules against this or adopting ordinances and laws that impact or prohibit that seed production. Nowhere in there does it say that the state can't. The state is simply saying no one else but us can write rules on this. So, and of course, it's just an ORS. It can be revisited at any time. And they're saying, in the meantime, you don't get to write rules on this, period. So I quoted it as, and many of these things are just a matter of perspective. I quoted it as a good thing, and it can be used in a good way. But it can also be used in quite a terrible way. And maybe just lightly, I'll use another example of that, going over onto the water subject. One of the big things that's come out in that same article that's been touching on the CAFOs is water restrictions, and there's this element that they're using satellite imagery to quantify who's using water illegally, and then they hone in on those people and send them a letter and say, hey, you don't actually have a water right, or you're operating outside of your water right that you don't have, you're irrigating more acres than you should, stop. This has been going on for a number of years. Just recently in Lake County, there were several landowners who I will not name on this show that were pretty egregious offenders. And what they would do is they would put an end gun on their pivots, and then those end guns would pick up a different additional acreage outside of the acres that they were actually irrigating, and
including the highway,
including the highway, including my county roads that were and
water. You're not supposed to water roads with your irrigation because it ruins
the roads.
It costs somebody else money, and it also creates a hazard.
It does. It creates a hazard. You could drive over the roads and see your road oil actually being washed away. You know, this like color, like road oil is just being washed off because this end gun is sitting there pounding the water. Pounding the highway in the middle of summer.
As a pivot goes around in circles, for those people who don't know how that works.
It's my job to maintain those assets and to be a good steward of those dollars, and it's really difficult to do when other people think that they can abuse it. Well, some of these individuals were the worst offenders of utilizing water to irrigate acres they did not have a right to irrigate. The north end of our county, and this is where, you know, water law gets even more complicated. You know, I'm not going into prior appropriation rights and the way Western states actually value. Oregon law, constitutionally and statutory, provides that all water is publicly owned. Okay, unfortunately, that's the reality, with only a few exceptions. And therefore, the state actually interprets this because Oregon law says it's a public resource. The state interprets this and claims authority and jurisdiction over all water throughout the state and views it as a public resource in that way. I don't know if I would necessarily agree with the state's interpretation, but again, that's the way they look at it based upon the language that was provided in the Constitution and the statute. So they come in and they say, we're going to police this. To make matters more complicated, Lake County has a unique history of having the first moratorium placed on additional groundwater usage in the state and in the state's history. And it was implemented not by the state, but by the landowners. The landowners went to the state and said, we want a moratorium. And you would think, why would someone do such a thing? You know, I mean, these are water law has been in existence in our state since 1909. And groundwater has been subject to permit requirements statewide since 1955. But all of a sudden in 1970s, a bunch of landowners in Christmas Valley go to the state and say, hey, we want to put a cap on this. We don't want anyone else getting it. So you can look at this in two ways. But first, what happened was, while Harney County to our east and Klamath County to the west are both losing up to 3 feet in their aquifer per year, Lake County is losing on average between 2 to 3 inches, tops, across the board. Our aquifer is in fairly good shape compared to everyone else around us. And that's because, some would argue, because there was a moratorium put in place, and they were trying to preserve a resource for future generations. You could also look at it as those who had wanted to make sure that no one else had or got. And so it's a matter of perspective on this. But it was the landowners who went to the state and said, hey, I have a prior appropriation. I have a water right that goes back, you know, a century. And I want to make sure that that's there for my kids and grandkids. And I got neighbors over here that are using water rights that they have no right to. So the state goes and about and does it in the only way they can, where they don't get a gun put in their face, and they look at satellite imagery and they send the person a letter. Over 2,000 acres were being illegally irrigated within the north end of the county that fell within a moratorium area that was implemented by the people, not the state.
Well, and it was not only
that were arguing for that enforcement to take place.
And I'll lay you odds that a lot of the people that were arguing the loudest for that enforcement were also the people that were abusing their own water rights and taking more water than they should.
Several of them.
Yeah. Not all of them. But that's a common...
Everyone involved in this.
That's just human nature. I know corruption doesn't begin in government. Corruption begins with the people.
Correct. That's my point here, is that we can point to the government, but the reality is the people get the governments they deserve.
Yeah.
And in this case, they actually got the government they asked for.
As long as you look to government to solve your problems, you will always suffer tyranny. And that was said hundreds of years ago, before the American Revolution, by an Englishman in the Parliament.
So I question then how, and this is something I struggle with, and one of the reasons why I struggle quite significantly on how to do my job appropriately and also be a good Christian, and I'm always sitting there weighing what God wants me to do, and I imagine King David did the same thing. God told them, you don't want a king. I don't want you to have a king. You shouldn't have a king, but I'm not going to say no if you want a king. And the people elected a king. And he's like, all right, here you go. Have fun with this. And then you get David eventually, you know, who's the king after God's own heart. And he's sitting there weighing things all the time. And, man, he screwed up multiple times. I mean, if I did anywhere near the stuff he pulled. And I mean, I just can't believe. Sometime when you really put your mind to it, you know, the stuff that David did, and God forgave him, and we all read the Bible, and we're like, yeah, but he repented. Do you realize what he did? I mean, put it in context. I mean, the dude went and, like, intentionally tried to get a guy killed and succeeded in getting him killed so he could mess around with his wife. I mean, and we look at that, and we're like, yeah, but he repented. Terrible, terrible.
Yeah, but he suffered for it. The consequences weren't going to go away. But who did he end up, you know, the child that he was producing at first, that child died. Later on, he had Solomon. Solomon was breaking every rule in the book. And I was just in an interview where somebody asked, what about Solomon? And I talked about it this morning on the show because of what Solomon was doing. And I said, people think that because Solomon was there, everything he was doing was God's plan. God's plan was that if you want to have a king, the repercussions is he's going to end up taken and taken and taken and taken and taken and taken. And you're going to cry out, and I'm not going to hear you. That's God's plan. Man, that's why he warned you ahead of time not to do it. David was a king after God's own heart because that wasn't the only repentance. He also instituted a draft. Right. He instituted a number of things, but then he repented of them.
Contributions to the people.
Yeah, and he started to, force the contributions of the people. Not nearly what Solomon did. Solomon hewed the stones of the altar, but the altar was still, well, it wasn't entirely, but pretty much, it was still a free will altar. Saul only forced a contribution of the people to supply his military. The social welfare of the people was still supplied by free will offerings under Saul. And, of course, that's what Saul was elected to be, is the commander-in-chief of the military. And to maybe, because of that, he was also was allowed to fire those people in the government of Israel that were taking graft and corruption. He could fire them. Now, they could have got rid of them through the tens, hundreds, and thousands, but they decided, no, let's give a king the power to decide. And, of course, we see later David had the power to fire the money changers, which was those people in government taking graft and corruption. It was the porters of the temple. And then along comes Jesus, and he actually fires them. But today, we go back to Article 2, Section 22, you could have stopped a great deal of the graft and corruption that was going through 80% of the people holding public office. And we showed the data, we showed you the printouts of the actual who was taking the bribes and who was refusing them. And the people didn't act. They didn't say anything. And now we're at the... And so I'm equating this with that Article 2, Section 22, and the people's lack of attending to the weightier matters. We did it here with seed production. And does this, that first bill that we talked about a couple of weeks ago was about the power that the state assumed it had in relationship basically to the power grid. They were going to turn over to private corporations, right, which is a part of what we call corporatism. Right. And you said no, and you kind of stood in the gap there a little bit along with other people that you gained support from. But one of the things I know from day one when you first took on this job, and it's probably still this lurking back there, but you don't bring it up all the time, but I get to because I ain't running for office, is... You can't do your job without the support of the people. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of forces out there that, they were probably pretty upset with that amendment that you put in the bill.
Yes.
And I know you've been offered jobs by some power companies, I don't know if it's the same ones, but that would pay a lot more than the job that you've taken. But... The reality is you're going to ruffle feathers, but I know that deep down you want to ruffle the hearts of the people that they start attending to the weightier matters. And recently we've done a couple of shows where we mentioned, in fact, I got a call from somebody in the Midwest that talking, thought it was a real good deal that they were starting a militia. And I said, no, it's not a good deal. It's a really bad deal. Because unless you deal with your own hearts of caring about your neighbor as much as you care about yourself. In other words, wean yourself off of, or go cold turkey as far as I'm concerned, with the legal charity offered to you by government and start becoming what Christ was preaching, where you took care of the social welfare in your society through faith, hope, and charity instead of the force and fear and fealty that is required by governments. Until you deal with that, if you got a militia that actually overthrew some tyrant somewhere in the world, it would become a tyrant. Because if you think you're going to gain your freedom by the use of the sword, I have nothing against having a sword or a gun. I got a sword right behind me, and there's an axe back there too. That was a gift from somebody in the network. But the reality is, your salvation is you have to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the commandment. All the commandments hinge on those two things. Love God, who's a giver of life. God's not taking away the rights of the people. He's not taking away the rights of his neighbor. But he also has to actively love your neighbor's rights as much as you love your own. You have to love his right to produce a crop, to have a dairy cow or 10 dairy cows or 50 dairy cows. Like you said, these rules should only apply to 700, because that's reasonable. Because 700 dairy cows along a stream in Tillamook can cause damage to the neighbor.
Sure, it might even cause damage here in Lake County, you know, but Tillamook County, where it rains 10 feet per year, and there's a lot of people.
It's all lowland. Yeah, that water's going to go downhill. It's going to go into the thing, and it should be washed. But then you can go to Europe, and you can see that they are using it to gain control over the food supply and the farmers. And there are those people that would do the same in America, and they would succeed if Americans don't wake up to what Christ was really preaching.
What's happening in Europe is an image of what could happen here. And yes, right now we're only talking capos, and then we're going to talk, you know, 700 cows to 1,000 or whatever. But what happens tomorrow? What happens next year when they come back around? Because, I want to read you just one comment here that was said by an environmentalist, just on this same thing. Environmentalists say the new law is the modest step towards protecting drinking water in Oregon. A modest step, quote unquote. She says, it's really notable that our coalition and legislators were able to finally stand up to Big Ag and pass a bill that even enacts modest reforms on the factory farm industry, said Tara Heinzen, the Food and Water Watch, with Food and Water Watch. Because this is an incredibly powerful industry. This bill doesn't go nearly far enough, she said. But it is good to see the state finally take groundwater overuse by factory farms seriously and put even a modest temporary limit on exploitation of the so-called stock watering loophole that has allowed factory farms to take virtually unlimited water from scarce groundwater resources. Now again, all of this stuff is, you know, it's a matter of perspective. This actually wasn't a bad article. Jeff Windler, who is the director of livestock operations and for Three Mile Canyon Farms there, his operation has 35,000 milking cattle based in Boardman. 35,000 milking cows. So, you know, like you do talk about industry like this, that could have an effect. I could understand, but when you start catching so many of these other folks in the crossfire, it's very impactful. And this is a question I would pose on here, because I get asked these questions a lot, and people ask me to give, what do you think the right thing is to do in this situation? Well, here's an example. In one of these articles that came out, there was a young woman over in the valley. She had a small little farm there. I can't remember how many acres she had in full, but her garden was around 3 to 5 acres or something like that. And in the state of Oregon, you don't even have to have a water right in order to irrigate up to a half acre. You don't need to have any kind of prior appropriation. You're just allotted that as, you know, if you've got land, you can irrigate it. Even if you live within a, like a municipal water, source, you might have some trouble if you're in an urban growth boundary, but like Crescent Valley isn't. It's not incorporated. They do have a municipal, like, water district, for a service. But, so you have to pay for whatever water you use, typically. But you can also drill your own well within that water district. Even if it's in a water district, you don't have to buy from the service. So if, let's say you had a well, and you can irrigate up to a half acre. It could be a lawn, or it could be a garden. This one lady, she was irrigating several acres. I think it was like 3 or 5. And she had, she'd go to the farmer's market and she was selling food. And it was her main source of income, were the vegetables and food that she grew on her farm, which is, you know, a great deal. I mean, like, good for her. She's living her dream. She's actually got land and she's wanting to produce something with it, which was the original intent of Oregon Water Law, which was to encourage the water use to be put to a
productive purpose.
To production.
Because it's serving the community.
Correct. Which was the original intent of Western Water Law in the first place. So she does this, though. And she doesn't have any water right outside that half acre. But she's irrigating like five. And so the landowners around them, you know, if they start having impacts from the water rights that they do have and the prior appropriation rights that they maintain and they feel like, you know, they have a right to, which according to the law, they do. She makes a sob story saying, I don't understand. Why is farming now illegal? Well, it's not illegal, but the use of how much water you're using could be argued to be an illegal amount. And so you received a letter saying, you're not allowed to use this much. And so now you're upset. You've gone to the paper, the news, and everything else, and you're making this argument, and you're getting a lot of people worked up because everyone's mad now, thinking the government's coming for them and so forth. And I'm not saying that there isn't a war on farms. Not at all, in the slightest. But I have a serious question on my hands now. What's the right thing to do in this situation? It's not that I have anything against this woman. In fact, I think it's great that she's farming and she's actually able to generate a decent income. She's obviously put in a lot of time and effort. And she's also, by now, you could actually make an argument that she has an established use. But it's still going to be a junior water right. It's not going to supersede any of the senior water right holders with prior appropriation rights based on any Western societal law. So what's the right thing to do here? That's my question. What would you say was the right thing in this situation? Because you could look at it in two different ways. The neighbors both have water rights. She doesn't on paper. She has a right to a half acre, and she was only told to reduce her garden back to a half acre, and there was words in the article like she's looking at all the garlic she planted and, you know, there's investment there clearly. And she's thinking, you know, I hope it makes it because I can't irrigate it anymore. So what's the right thing to do?
Well, if the people actually care, you know, I know people who, you know, a widow lady on her property and she was trying to make ends meet and she was getting older and older and it was more and more difficult. The local community would make sure that she had enough to eat, make sure that she was taken care of. She wasn't related to anybody there, but they just did it. They went out of their way to make sure that she was provided for. And we've seen this with when we deal with somebody that's hardworking and productive in the community, we go out of our way to help take care of that individual. I think we should do a lot more than we're doing. And, of course, there are other people that have been a pain in the side of the community, and people are less likely to run over and help them out when they get into trouble. They may look at the jail roster to see, are they in there again? But that's just human nature.
See the jail roster.
Yeah, that's another story. We're not opening that
camera. It's done now. It's done.
Did you fix that?
Yeah, it's all fixed.
Okay, good, good.
It turns out it's actually allowed in every state of the union to hold people in jail secretly.
Yeah, I know. That's what I first heard that. I said, do we have a secret police style that's holding people in jail and not telling anybody?
That's why you have Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want another Guantanamo Bay started in Lake County. But people don't discuss these things. And so they just get an idea and they think, oh, yeah, we can do that. No, you can't. It's not right. It's not fair. But we're not used to thinking in these terms. But you were talking about that lady and her right. You know, we've seen it in this county where somebody has a water right, or maybe they've exceeded their water right, and they're pumping out of their well, and everybody else's well around them is dropping in level.
Potentially.
Yeah, well, actually, in some cases, we actually saw it dropping.
Sure, sure.
I've seen it in Christmas Valley, and I've seen it down in Lakeview.
We've seen it for us in summer.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how much of that is because people are pumping, and how much of it because they just put down all kinds of wells? Sure. But still, that's And they'll make it, you know, the state comes along. If we don't have a voice, we've done this where we went down and we said, no, you can't take that land and change its status because that affects everybody else in the community.
Right.
And in a big way. And they were already taking all kinds of water out of the ground that they hadn't been before, and we see that the water levels dropping so that people who had water at just their domestic house was decreasing. But anyway, the more you are required to care about one another on a day-to-day basis, the welfare of one another on a day-to-day basis, the more it will be easy to come up with a solution where you have an industrious old woman, you could give her a temporary permit because all the people round about her say, yeah, we'll let her have an extra half acre from our place. We'll let them have an extra half acre from our place. And because she, and just to her, because she's using it for the purpose that we have this, that God gave us the water. She's producing food. She's taking care of herself. But we don't do that. We think like, how do I get more?
So, to that point then.
Yeah.
And I appreciate where you're going. We didn't rehearse this or anything, but you're basically making my argument.
Well, so, we are related, so.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we probably rehearsed it at some point or another, but, you know, I'm probably using different, you know, and this is why I have this perspective. But basically what you're saying is, if, forgive me if I'm, you know, paraphrasing this wrong. The answer to this scenario would not be more government overreach or government enforcement, but neighbors saying, hey, you know, you're using a lot of water. You don't have that actual water right. Would you be willing to, you know, can I give you some water right here? You know, the state's going to come in and they're going to put some enforcement on you. So can we work this out together? Are you interested in buying some of my water rights? Or, you know, maybe I could give you a half acre, and maybe if you'll buy an acre of water right from me, I'll give you a half acre for free, whatever. You know, you could work something out where, you know, and maybe I get a discount or something on your vegetables, you know, whatnot. Because I think you're doing a really great job and you're using the water appropriately. And I'd like to ensure that, you know, you can be successful and continue doing what you're doing, but that we do this fairly, because the water that you're using is actually impacting mine as well. Maybe it's the surface water even, and you're pulling too much water from the stream and it's not getting to me because you're upstream from me.
Yeah.
You know, and give examples like that.
The thing is that people can work this out, but they have to sit down and have the conversation. And like you're saying, this could be a temporary use that she gets to use some of their water, what they have as a water right, as long as she's alive. And then it comes back to you when she finally passes away. But you don't want to give it away to a corporation that never dies.
Yeah,
but you can give it away to her temporarily. As long as she, you know, and this is one of the things that you're always mitigating is like, you want the power of the county. Okay, you're going to put in a solar farm, or you're going to do this, or you're going to do something that impacts the land, or you're going to clear all this. And we want the right to say, yeah, this corporation can come in and do this, but you're also going to impact our roads. You're also going to impact that. So you have to regulate that because you're dealing with these undying corporations all the time that coming in. But you have to put the individual. Because this is where the rights come from. They don't come from corporations. They don't come from the government. They come to individuals. But if individuals won't even have that conversation, if the only thing that they say is, hey, can you come as a government and stop that person from having an RV parked 20 miles from me? Because I don't want to see any, I want to be able to look 25 miles out my front window and not see anything else. Like you said at the very beginning of this conversation, your backyard stops at the end of your backyard. It isn't your neighbor. You don't have any power over your neighbor. But if you work together, you'll be stronger as a community, so that when those outside interests, whether they come from George Soros or the CCP or wherever they are coming from all over the world, it's not the New World Order, they call it whatever it is.
Oh,
WEF. Yeah. These people want to have control. Like they say, you will own nothing and you will still be happy. Well, if we own nothing, who owns everything? Because somebody owns it. Somebody has the right to control it. And the only reason that even comes up now is because we haven't been able to be good stewards on our own property with our own neighbors. Where we are a scattered flock, isolated, away from each other. And if we don't come together, we'll die one by one at the hands of those who do not have our best interest at heart. If you want God to hear your prayers, you have to hear the cries of your neighbor. And that's something we always go back to. But we've gone over, we've almost been here for an hour and a half, and I think we really, I don't know, is there anything else that you wanted to bring up? Okay.
No, great topics.
Hopefully that we'll be able to put this on YouTube. And I appreciate him taking the time. I see we have a number of callers. Nobody raising their hand for a question. I don't see any questions. Matter of fact, I didn't see any activity in the chat room, which is a good sign. Because when they're not listening, they're chitter-chattering in the chat room. But if they have any questions, you got a couple of minutes, or maybe even less, to put them up. But I think we really covered a lot of this subject. And we did bring it back to the kingdom, that all the loss of liberty in the world today is because we're not doing what Christ actually said to do. We're not doing what the Jews aren't doing what Moses said to do. The Muslims aren't doing what Abraham said to do. The Christians aren't doing what Christ said to do. They think they are, but that may be a strong delusion. But anyway, I really appreciate you coming on and taking out your time. I know you're not out in the country.
I did take the photo, but no, I'm not out. I'm not up in the forest right now.
Did you actually take that photo?
I did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's up on Fremont Point. It's looking up north towards Bend.
Okay.
You can actually see Table Rock and Fort Rock in the background, and it's a real clear day. It's a real nice shot.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to save the story of your famous dog that appeared before the county. Was it commissioners that you were mostly dealing with? The commissioners?
Yeah, it was about 150, 200 commissioners or something. And then there was a bunch of lobbyists and different people as well.
Yeah. And everybody was all of a sudden at the last minute doing a PowerPoint demonstration. You didn't have one. And so you put together pictures of your dog and just kept clicking for one. It was the biggest hit I think you've seen. It had nothing to do with the topic. But no. You were able to bring humor to it. I thought that really what the real story there is, you were raking people over the coals for their abuses of power.
Right.
And everybody was loving it because your dog is so dang cute. You couldn't have thought of this except you were cornered, but it was a great, great opportunity.
Yeah, it just sort of happened, and I could just touch on that real briefly. You're waiting for responses in the chat if anyone has any questions.
Yeah, we're waiting for any questions that are coming up. Anybody wants to raise their hand and ask a question, you do it by pushing one if you're in the phone queue. But anyway, go ahead. We'll give you that last little bit.
Yeah, I was asked to speak on a panel with DLCD, or Department of Land Conservation and Development, and a lobbyist from Washington County, and trying to remember if there was, another county commissioner from Benton County. And I'm pretty sure she hates me. She hasn't spoken to me really since this. But we had kind of a group chat on a Zoom call the week before, or a couple weeks before, and we'd kind of met each other real briefly, and I knew the commissioner, but I didn't know the other folks, and we decided, hey, okay, so we're going to talk on this. I'm going to share on this and this. I was the only person that really didn't have subject. I was going to give some county perspective on some land use requirements, on redoing comprehensive plans, and looking at housing within urban growth boundaries and so forth. And I was like, gosh, I hate this stuff. I don't want to speak on this. But everyone knew that I'm passionate about land use and property rights. And so they wanted me on this panel. And I honestly did not know what I was going to speak right up until the point where the DLCD guy started talking. I had no script, really, and we had decided we weren't going to do any PowerPoints. We were just going to present some notes and some opinions. Last minute, the night before the panel was supposed to take place, AOC lobbyists or Association of Oregon Counties lobbyists came to see me, Brandon Persinger, and he says, hey, Commissioner Williams, I just want you to know, so-and-so is wanting to do a PowerPoint, and it's big. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I was going through dinner. It was really late at night, and I was tired, and I was thinking about just going to bed. And I said, is it a good PowerPoint? He says, it's detailed. It's got a lot in it. And I said, oh, gosh, dang it. We agreed we weren't going to do PowerPoints. So is everyone doing PowerPoints? And he says, I guess the DLC guy now says he's going to try and do a PowerPoint, too, if she's going to do a PowerPoint. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I have nothing. I'm going to look like an idiot up there. I have nothing whatsoever. And it kind of irritated me because we had agreed that we weren't going to do PowerPoints. And I hate putting them together, and I'm not going to do it at the last minute. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to go put up a bunch of pictures of my dog. And I'm just going to randomly throw pictures of cute dog up there, you know, and see how she likes that. Because people will look at those. And he says, okay, well, if you're going to do that, all right, you do it at your own risk. And I was frustrated, and the lobbyist from Washington County says, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I'll do it, too. I'm like, no. You'll get in trouble if you go toe-to-toe with the commissioner. You can't do that with an elected official. I can, however, because I'm not... It's not considered insubordination or, you know, inappropriate. So I said, let me take care of this. I'm going to do this. So it happens. I've got all the pictures uploaded. I went through my phone and found a bunch, sent them to Brandon. He had them on his computer, and he was just looking at me, and he had this little giggle on his face. He's like, this is either going to suck or it's going to be really funny. And I still had no script. Get up there, and when the DLC guy started talking, he started saying things like, counties need to do this, and we're directing counties that they need to go through their comprehensive plan and do this and such. And the lobbyists started speaking, and everyone did their little slideshow, and I got to speak last. And the minute He had several little points that he talked about on urban growth boundaries and what counties could and couldn't do, and this is right and this is wrong and everything. And he started drawing all these correlations to what local discretion should look like, and I instantly had my speech.
Basically, what he's really saying is that this is how we should take away the rights of the people.
That's exactly what he was saying, and so I had my speech. I knew exactly what I wanted to say, and I was mad. In addition, so, you know, you're going down. Every single one of you are going down. And so I got to it, and the first shot I put up was something a little bit similar to this. There was some wheatgrass in the background and everything, and some open farmland. And so I just said, so I just want you to know, being that we had agreed that we weren't going to do PowerPoint, I don't have a PowerPoint. But I do have some great pictures for you all to enjoy. And just so you know, nothing that you're going to see on this screen has anything to do with what I'm going to say. And so then I just started like putting up pictures of my dog in the background. And then I started going through it, and I proceeded to roast and fire shots over the bow of DLCD and the state agencies for imposing these requirements on local jurisdictions that already had comprehensive plans in place, and that you don't get to tell them what they do or do not put in their comprehensive plans, and forbid them from expanding urban growth boundaries and so forth. And so I just, and then every time I would make a punchline, I would click the screen and it would do another picture of the dog. And I just had the whole room laughing and on the edge of their seat, wanting to see either what the next picture was going to be or what I was going to say next, because I was getting a little pissy. I was just, I was getting nasty with these guys, and they thought it was funny. And there's all these local government guys and lobbyists, and they're like, I'd get fired if I said that. and I just kept going. And so,
as we've seen this with comedians, which is why they try to cancel so many comedians. You didn't have to say anything funny.
No, I did. I actually.
But you had the comedy relief in the images that were popping up, and you had some help. I know there was some plants in the audience that somebody had put in.
I didn't have any plants, but there
was a
commissioner in the audience that saw the picture, knew it was my dog, and it was, the dog was covered in snow and everything, and it was winter and so forth. And the picture showed up on the screen, and I could hear a guy in the back go, "That's July in Lake County."
Or the oohs and ahs.
Then. Yeah, there's, and then there was a David Yamamoto, commissioner from Tillamook County. He said he was going to start going, ooh, aw, you know, every time a dog photo came up. And so that was all them. That wasn't me planning that.
No, but the reality is the hard things that you were saying were getting heard.
Right.
Because there was the comedy relief. Otherwise, if you just stood up there and bashed them one after another, people would start getting uncomfortable, they'd start getting sour, they would kind of like, oh my gosh, what's he going to say next, and everything.
Yeah, yep,
but the relief of having, I mean, I don't want to say that you were a genius, but it ended up being a genius move. You were kind of cornered into it. It just happened.
It wasn't me. It just happened, and I was a little irritated that I had to go and do a PowerPoint all of a sudden, and so that was just what I came up with, but it was... It just came to me, and then it ended up happening that way, and it went well to the point where months later I was on the street corner in Salem, and I was walking to the Capitol from the AOC building, and I'm standing there, and a guy walks up on my right, and I'm sitting there, I'm waiting for the walkway to open, and I look over, and I just kind of like smile at him, you know, and I look back, you know, and acknowledge his presence, and I can tell he's like looking at me. He's like staring me down and trying to figure something out. I don't know what it was. And it was borderline uncomfortable for me, and I wasn't sure what the deal was. And then all of a sudden he goes, "Let me guess. Lake County." And I looked at him. Yeah. And he says, "You have the dog." And I said, "I do have a dog." He says, "That presentation you gave back in November, that was the best presentation I have ever seen." And he said, "You are great." And I just, I was like, okay, thanks, man.
Well, one of the things is, I know of some of the farmers that you're dealing with, some of the innovators who are actually doing real imaginative things with water and ground that they couldn't get water rights on. And they've done things that are conservation, innovative things that you couldn't hardly even imagine or come up with.
Right.
And if we start locking people in so they can't use their land or the land that they have at least a legal title on to do the innovative things, you are going to strangle the life out of the people.
Right.
And there is an element in this world who don't think they are doing that. They actually think that they're saving the planet or, you know, stopping global warming or something like that.
They say they're advocating for farmland, but no one's talking about the farmers.
Yeah.
Without the farmers, you don't have farmland.
Yeah.
You have Nature Conservancy growing weeds.
Yeah.
And ODFNW taking it out of agricultural use
and not managing it appropriately because they don't have to. They're a government employee that gets paid whether it's managed right or not.
Yeah, now you're opening a can of worms. The Spielbauers of our own local community, which is the German for play farmers.
I'm sorry.
I'm not afraid to do it because they chances are they're not listening to this show.
Well,
but,
I'm not county commissioner.
Yeah, so but the reality is that it is the people on the ground that are actually making this country work, and they're being strangled. Like I said, you should not need a lawyer to milk a cow. You shouldn't need, you know, an attorney or a firm of attorneys to plant a seed. And the seed that we want to plant in the hearts and minds of the people is that if you want to keep your rights that were given to you by God, you have to care about the rights of your neighbor as much as you care about your own. Now, you can do it by saying, well, I elected somebody and I expect him to fix everything.
Yeah, right.
But that's the road to tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to become a part. And when you do have, when you have a congressman or whoever, you know, that is going to be your representative, you got to hold his feet to the fire. He's got to keep the rules. When they did away with Article 2, Section 22, Oregon was toast, in my opinion.
Right.
What you're doing now is mostly out there trying to awaken people to the fact that they have to go back and take their responsibility and keep their heads above water long enough to make it through whatever is coming.
But you can't force them to do the
no.
right thing. And it goes back to that lady, you know, her neighbors it would be great if her neighbors came and worked out water right appropriation with her so that she didn't have to lose those acres and she could still grow all that food. But I can't, in my position or
right.
force people to be to operate in faith, hope, and charity. I can't force that. That you cannot legislate morality on the people.
And what you're seeing is there are elements that come along. Sometimes they're good intention, but they don't understand how things really work. But they're hampering the rights of the people. And every time that you make that stand and make it, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that are diametrically opposed to what you believe, but they actually, because you treat them with respect and honest in dealing with them, that they're willing to work with you. Now, I'm sure there are people behind the scenes that would like to see you gone out of the picture.
Oh,
but
no, I've got some knives in my back. I'm well aware of where the majority of my enemies are. Occasionally, a couple slip behind me, and you know, I lose peripheral vision at times.
But that's why you need the people.
That's right.
More and more people wake up to what we need to be doing. If you want your freedoms back, you have to take your responsibilities back. And if you find an actual congressman or senator, or county commissioner, or mayor, or whatever in your community, you have to hold his feet to the fire, and, you know, when he's out of line, you have to say, you know, like you're out of line. In the long run, that's tending to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, which is one of the things, that's a quote for people who aren't used to hearing me. Christ condemned the Pharisees because they would not attend to the weightier matters. And I have asked minister after minister after minister, what did Jesus call the weightier matters? And they did not know. Now, back to the question, that's another full circle on our rabbit trail. Well, why do you have to have a Congress? Why do you regulate anything? And the reason you have a Congress is because you're not the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. That in the time of Moses, they had a Sanhedrin, which was literally their Congress, but they weren't passing laws for the people. That didn't come for another 1,000, 1,500 years, where the Sanhedrin became, where it was creating statutes. Even if you go back to the study of the word statute, statutes were guidelines. Even in Oregon revised statutes, if you read the precursor statements concerning the statutes, it says the statutes are guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really laws. For the bureaucrat, they're laws. because he cannot step outside of those ORSs or the OARs, which is another thing, Oregon right. Administrative Rules.
Administrative Rules.
They have to abide by that, but that's to keep them in line so that they don't abuse their bureaucratic power. But most people don't even know what the OARs are or the ORSs are or any of those things. But they also don't know what the kingdom of God is. And if they start to find out what that is, even though you're all back in the bondage of Egypt, and there's a lot of people gunning for your rights to take them away so that you own nothing and still be happy. I don't know how you're going to legislate happiness.
You have the right to pursue happiness, and that's it.
Yeah, you can't legislate.
That's up to you.
So,
you're not guaranteed.
The trick is to do what Christ said, what Moses said, what Abraham said, and start coming together and stop being a scattered flock. But anyway, with that, appreciate you coming. Don't see any hands
appreciate
up.
You have me. Next time maybe we'll talk a lighter subject like Romans 13 or something.
I think we can make that pretty heavy too.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks for coming, James. And we'll probably bring this show to an end. And I'll play their theme music. And thanks everybody for coming in the chat room. And next time maybe we'll do some of the things that we had prepared for today. But until then, peace on your house and may God with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.